So I don't believe there's the secret to success. I really do believe you make your success. And if you talk to a Hollywood actor, a famous hockey player, or a famous cricket player, or a Nobel Prize winner, nobody did it overnight. It's always been hard work. They've been knocked down, they've picked themselves up. They've been knocked down, they've picked themselves up. And those, to me, are the most successful people.
This is The Entrepreneur Way with Neil Ball. Unlocking the secrets of successful entrepreneurs 7 days a week. Subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter at Neil D. Ball. Napoleon Hill said the power of the mastermind is the driving force. To discover how you can unlock the potential in your business using the power of a mastermind, go to mastermindunlimited.com. And now, here is your host, Neil Ball.
Hello, it's Neil Ball here. Thank you so much for joining me today on The Entrepreneur Way. The Entrepreneur Way is about the entrepreneur's journey, the vision, the mindset, the commitment, the sacrifice, failures and successes. I am so excited to bring you our special guest today, Keith Alper. But before I introduce you to Keith, I have a quote for you by Friedrich Nietzsche. He who has a why can endure any how. The Entrepreneur Way asks the questions so we all get the insight, inspiration and ideas to apply in our businesses. Keith, welcome to the show. Are you ready to share your version of the Entrepreneur Way with us?
Yes, absolutely, Neil.
Thank you very much for coming on the show today, Keith. With more than 30 years of experience, Keith Alper is a serial entrepreneur and champion for free enterprise, innovation and entrepreneurial leadership. He founded several St. Louis-based businesses and organizations, including Nitrous Effect, Eventif, Upbrand Collaborative, VidZoo.tv, and the Creative Producers Group. He is also the founder of the St. Louis Young Entrepreneurs Organization and serves on several boards across the area. He brings extensive marketing, branding, business strategy and event production experience to GenieCast and has produced special events, meetings, video, film, broadcast and major entertainment projects around the world. Keith has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Inc. Magazine, Fortune Magazine, and has received numerous awards, including the Inc. 500 Top 100 Multimedia Producers Award and the St. Louis Business Journal's 40 Under 40 Award. Keith, can you provide us with some more insight into your business and personal life to allow us to get to know more about who you are and what you do?
Well, thank you so much, Neil. So a little bit about me. First of all, knew what I wanted to do when I was a little kid. And so have been involved in entertainment, production, and marketing, really from, you know, doing little stage shows in my parents' basement. So I've just turned 55. So I'll tell you, I've been very fortunate to do what I wanted to do for a very long time. I started my first business when I was 16 years old, when I met my still business partner working at a theme park called Six Flags in the entertainment division. And so have had my business a long time and have since yielded that to seven other entrepreneurial related companies, from marketing, global event production, video and film. And really what I'm kind of, one of the businesses I'm most excited to talk about is our newest business, GenieCast. So I've been an entrepreneur a long time, didn't know how to spell an entrepreneur, kind of was an accidental entrepreneur. and have felt very blessed to be able to do what I love and do every single day.
Can you tell us a little bit more about GenieCast?
Sure, thank you. So GenieCast is one of the most fascinating, interesting businesses that we've started. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're in the big meeting and event production, so we would book a live speaker to come to speak to an event. And a few years ago, we thought with the advent of different two-way video technologies, why do we have to have someone live at the event when they could be live via video two-way? And so a few years ago, actually we launched a year ago in May, we launched GenieCast, and GenieCast is the world's first two-way interactive content platform. So we're not in the business of Skype or GoToMeeting. We're in the business of connecting you with some of the world's greatest thought leaders, experts, CEOs, entrepreneurs, thousands of people that you normally couldn't book, that now you can afford to book, as well as maybe they couldn't travel, but now they can via two-way video to either your conference room, your conference hall, or to your Salesforce on the cloud. And so that's what GenieCast is. Think of us almost as the iTunes of live two-way interactive speakers and experts.
So when you say it's two-way interactive, I mean, something like Google Hangouts is interactive both ways. Sorry, it's two-way. So how does this differ from something like Google Hangouts or video on Skype?
Yeah, so you're talking about the technology platform.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the content. So what I'd first like to explain is, if wherever you live around the world, you have a cable company or satellite company, and they are providing you digital dial tone or technology. But our business is the business of content. We're delivering Netflix, HBO, and Showtime. So if you can think of GenieCast, the technology is what lets us do what we do. But for us to be able to deliver Steve Wozniak, the founder of Apple, all the way through major CEOs, authors, world leaders, interacting with you, we have that technology and the marketplace and are the market maker for that. So we are a live two-way content platform, but we're providing the content. If you want to do – so we enable technology, but we're a pure content curation company.
Ah, so the difference is you provide the content as well. Aha.
That's our first play. So if you want to have Steve Wozniak speak at your meeting tomorrow,
yeah,
live via two-way video, the only way to get Steve Wozniak is through GenieCast. And we've already arranged the pricing, the technology, the production. All of that is all wrapped up in the GenieCast. In fact, what I love to tell people is you can book over 4,000 different top experts, authors, speakers, athletes, and celebrities. If you go to GenieCast.com, in 18 seconds that you can book them for a live two-way interactive event. It's not pre-recorded. They can hear you. They can see you. They can talk to your sales team. They can talk to your board of directors. Do you want someone from Skype? Do you want someone from LinkedIn? Do you want someone from Netflix? Do you want somebody from Boeing? Or do you want the world's greatest authors? That's what GenieCast is providing.
Wow. So where did the idea from that come from?
Well, the idea came from, you know, we work with a lot of big organizations around the world that spend millions and millions and millions of dollars of flying a keynote speaker in, putting them up at a hotel, paying first class travel, and paying exorbitant fees. And our idea was, but what about just the general business person that doesn't have $40,000 or $10,000 to spend on a speaker? And what if we could turn the whole model upside down? Is if I'm an author and I want to speak to you, that I'm charging $20,000, what would I need to charge you if I'm just doing this via video so I don't have to leave my office or my home? Or, you know, Neil, you're in the UK and I'm in the United States. If I wanted to bring you as a speaker, I can do it. So first of all, we're able to get the world's greatest content. We're able to make it easy for them, the speakers, what we call our genies. But more importantly, we're making this affordable to the masses. Most people don't have contact with these speakers and authors and experts. Okay? And then it would be very expensive. So we've erased the time part, and we've reduced the price of most speakers right, as much as 70 to 80% by doing it via GenieCast. And we manage the entire process. We have a producer on every cast. We can add graphics like it's a TV show. That's all live and interactive, and it's a single source solution. We're the first in the world to do this. Now we're the largest in the world to do it. We're doing it with very large companies and also small and medium-sized businesses.
It sounds like an absolutely fantastic idea. I mean, just because you're just opening up the possibility for so many other people who otherwise couldn't access these people, as you've said, just because of the cost of getting them to fly to you and put them up in a hotel and the all the other costs that are associated with it. And you're really giving people access without the cost, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, it's also interesting because not everybody's a big name. A lot of times someone's a subject matter expert.
Yeah.
So we had a client that was looking for a subject matter expert in the Zika virus, you know, that's made it around the world, really in North and South America. And so think of us as the giant database of every expert, author, speaker that you have access to. So sometimes it's not a big name speaker. Sometimes I want access to a top scientist. I want access to a former head of a nation. I want access to a scientist or a head of sales. And so sometimes it's about, so what we keep on learning from our clients are they're accessing GenieCast in a lot of different ways. Like, hey, in a week we have a board meeting and I need to learn more about the Zika virus and I want to talk to one of the experts with my board of directors. Or I want a big name speaker and I want to reduce the cost because we could never afford that person. And the other interesting thing, Neil, is it's got to be a win-win-win situation. First, a win for the customer, okay? And a win for the customer is to get incredible real-time content for your business, your nonprofit, okay, at a much reduced price and at a time that's good for you with an unbelievable resource. But for our speakers, or as we call them genies, and the reason we call them genies, and the reason the GenieCast is called GenieCast is only genies can make anyone, anytime, anywhere appear. And that's our brand promise, is to make anyone, anytime, anywhere appear, okay? And so we aren't just solving that solution. So what I love to tell somebody is, if I have a small school in Zimbabwe who wants a marketing expert from Los Angeles, California, I have that marketplace and I can deliver that. And what we can do now is make the world a much smaller, more connected place with all kinds of thought leaders, hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
What do you enjoy most about what you do?
Well, you know, as an entrepreneur, I enjoy solving problems. We enjoy creating something new, making people's lives easier. But to me, my favorite thing as an entrepreneur is waking up every morning, trying to figure out how we're going to progress this business and how we're going to grow our team. And every day we kind of, you know, we pivot a little bit, like this is working and this isn't working. And I think that's my most favorite thing of being an entrepreneur. Is we can be rule breakers, we can be market makers. Some things work and some things don't, but you pick yourself up and you move along. And that is my favorite thing about being an entrepreneur, but also that I recommend to students or people that say, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur. And it's like, you know, Neil, nothing's ever easy, but if you enjoy with what you do, you're gonna be more successful at it.
What drives you to do what you do?
I think it's the earlier question. I think it's about the passion and having fun and do what I love to do. And so I think people have to be naturally driven, but if you don't do what you love to do, you will not be driven. I don't care in what industry you're in. You have to love what you do.
How do you relax when you're not working in your business?
Neil, I don't relax. That's it. So, you know, I love being with entrepreneurs. I love business. So being with my family is great. Traveling is great. Watching a great Netflix movie is great. Taking in nature is great. But I will tell you, I don't play golf. I play business. And so that's what I love to do.
Do you have any entrepreneurial role models?
Oh, we could talk about this for hours. It's unbelievable how much you can learn from other entrepreneurs, their successes and their failures, and also people that you have seen as kind of rule breakers and disruptors. If you look at the top 200 companies today, from the Facebook and the Google and the Amazons and Netflix, you know, these companies weren't around a handful of years ago. And everybody told all those founders, it won't work, you can't do this. And so I love all entrepreneurs that break conventional wisdom and said, no, we are going to do this. We are going to make an autonomous car, right? We are going to have a video system like Skype, and we are going to be able to do commerce through Amazon. And all those old businesses that told the entrepreneurs you can't are now kind of their tails between their legs. So a few of my favorite entrepreneurs, Elon Musk, obviously Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos is one of my all-time favorites of, you know, it's taken a long time to make Amazon where it is. And a lot of things, people think Amazon's going to take over the world. But this is one guy who started in his bedroom, a business and a vision, and has carried that through and had ups and downs. And for your listeners, if you want to be an entrepreneur or you are an entrepreneur, you know we have ups and downs every single day. Several days, you know, we'll win it. And several days, you know, there's obstacles in front of us. So I continue to learn from entrepreneurs that I know that you don't know their names, or entrepreneurs that we all know. How do you learn from success, and how do you learn, I wouldn't call it from failure, but from trying things and readjusting and pivoting?
Keith, what we're going to do now is talk about the time before you were an entrepreneur. What difficulties did you have to overcome when you started your business?
Well, Neil, I might not be your typical interviewee or your typical entrepreneur. Earlier in the conversation, I mentioned I start working for a theme park company in St. Louis in the U.S. That has about 10 theme parks called Six Flags. And I was very fortunate to start there when I was a teenager working in the entertainment division. And we accidentally started our business. And so I was an accidental entrepreneur, and then over time said I'd get a real job. And then over time, over time determined I wanted to go start my business and learn better how to become an entrepreneur. All the entrepreneurial issues. Do I quit my job? Do I have enough money? What is my business model? And all those type of things. So look, before I started my business, I was actually a student. You know, I was coming out of high school and going into college. So I've had lots and lots of years of some many failures and also a few little successes here and there along the way. And I think you can ask any entrepreneur, we learn every single day, and those that don't learn will not be in business. So I'm probably a little bit different than somebody because I accidentally started my business. It was in my parents' basement when I was in high school.
Did you have any doubts that delayed you starting your business?
No, maybe because it happened, and then maybe delays and doubts have kind of propelled it forward. Like, this would this be a real career one day? Could I do this? Where will we get customers? You know, so my original business that's called CPG, we never borrowed any money. We started that business when we worked at the theme park. We made a little money, we put it in a bank account. We'd go get a little more money, you know, with a client, we put it in the bank account. And, so that business grew very not the typical way of go out and get money or get some investors or take a loan from a bank. That was a true bootstrap entrepreneurial business. Our other businesses like GenieCast, which I talked about earlier, that has investors and business plans and staff. And, you know, that is something we're taking, you know, a real big shot very quickly to become the first mover, to become the biggest, and also, most importantly, the best.
So you described yourself as an accidental entrepreneur with your first business. If you hadn't have accidentally created that business or ended up with that business, do you think you would have done it in any case? Or done something else, rather? Well, I mean, you might not have been that business, but do you think you would?
That's a really good question, because I always say I'd be the best employee for somebody because I love to work and I love what I do. And I then got into senior management at that Six Flags theme park, and I could have been part of that company, which was then part of a public company. I could see the rest of my life. I loved that job. but I probably wouldn't have succeeded in that job because I was probably too entrepreneurial inside a big company. So first time, you know, that's really one of the first times somebody's asked me that question. And now when I look back, I would have probably not been successful in the corporate structure as an entrepreneur, even inside a company, and would have gotten bored and probably became an entrepreneur along the way. So I think I had the entrepreneurship in me. I started a company for my high school when I was in high school, when I was in 10th grade. And so I guess I've been an entrepreneur. I had a little clown company when I was, you know, in my early teens. So I guess someone was an entrepreneur and didn't know it. But now that you've asked the question, I probably wouldn't have been very successful inside a big company because it wouldn't have let me be disruptive enough to my ideas and others' ideas.
What mistakes did you make that slowed your journey?
Do we have a few hours to talk about my mistake? I think like anything, it's you and I talked about it earlier. Is how do you make mistakes and learn from it? But more importantly, how do you make those mistakes and make sure it's a successful lesson immediately so the business can continue? How do I get customers? How do I get revenue? How do I have a team? And so, yeah, I mean, and I've heard this from lots and lots of entrepreneurs. A few mistakes is we had what's called founder's grip. A lot of founders of the company won't let go of this and won't let go of that. And I had founder's grip for a long, long time. I still have some of it, but I probably have a lot less than I did. And that's hire other people that are better at you in other things and don't think you know all the answers. So that was a mistake I made and probably one I didn't give up for a while. And so in our new companies, I'm much more out of the operations day to day. We bring on great team members. The other was as being an entrepreneur with not a lot of money when I was a kid or no money, I was very risk averse. Everybody thinks entrepreneurs want to jump out of planes and take risks. A lot of my entrepreneurial friends are very risk averse. So I didn't want to go borrow a bunch of money. I didn't want to risk money. So even still to this day, I'm probably a little too conservative. You know, in the U.S., to borrow money, it's very cheap. We still don't borrow money, and we should probably be borrowing money for growth in some of our own businesses. So I would say founder's grip, being conservative. And then the other lessons learned is from mistakes is how do I learn from the mistakes and categorize those and also share those with my team so we don't make them again? Or if we make them, we learn from them, we pivot that immediately to the business. Not like let's chalk one up to learning, which we should, but how do we make money and how do we keep from losing money? And sometimes mistakes can be very expensive. The best ones you test and try and they're not very expensive.
So what's the cure for founder's grip? How did you overcome it?
Well, I mentor a lot of entrepreneurs, and it's so funny because, as I said, I'm 55, and I'll mentor an entrepreneur who might be 27 or 28, and they might be a great entrepreneur, but they think they have to do everything themselves. And at times, sometimes you do, right? When my partner and I had our business, we were doing everything. We emptied the trash, we made the sales calls, we did the accounting, we produced the work. But there's a point in time when your business continues to pick up that you have to, again, get partners, bring great team members in, bring people that are much better at things than you are, even though you might be the expert in one thing. And a lot of it also now is having a coach, either an informal coach or a paid coach that can also coach you what you might want to shift and what you might, not need to shift and really what you should be focusing on day to day. So like in my companies, I need to be focusing on only three things. And there's 25 things that need to be in our company. Well, if I have founder's grip, I can't do all 25 well. And I also need to let my team do what they do best. So it's taken years and years, and I've gotten much better over the time. But it's something that most entrepreneurs have is that founder's grip. And I've learned the hard way and also seen the great way of letting go of a lot and letting your team take that over.
What are some of the things that you did before you started your business that would be helpful tips to some of the listeners who haven't yet taken the first step on the entrepreneur way?
First of all, thanks to the internet, Google and those things is you can read up and listen to podcasts like yours and watch videos and read. And so, having a passion for what you think you want to do, and also listening and learning and listening and learning. You know, reading business papers, reading online, reading blogs, following industries, following great entrepreneurs. You know, what I like to say is, you know, everything you need for a Harvard education now is online. You can hear thousands, if not millions, of podcasts and interviews. You can see case studies. You can research people. And so, you know, the pre-entrepreneur, first of all, sometimes, as I say, you just got to start. I just started my business. It wasn't perfect. I probably had not a good business plan. You know, Mark Zuckerberg didn't work all take a year to figure out what Facebook, it has happened very quickly. And so sometimes you just have to start. I've heard that from Silicon Valley people, is just start your business. It's not going to be perfect and you're going to have to pivot anyway. But reading and doing research, and it doesn't have to be a lot, it can be 10 minutes a night, is getting up to speed on what is relevant, what your customers want, what industries are hot. All is available online, and I'd say 99% free.
Keith, you've talked about the time before you were an entrepreneur. You've talked about your business. You've talked about your new platform, which is a two-way interactive platform. We've learned a little bit about your personal life. Now what I'd like to do is talk about the entrepreneurial journey with you. Do you think culture is important from the beginning in a business?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of my original businesses, CPG, is a culture company, a corporate culture company, mainly working for larger companies. So it's an interesting question because we eat, live, and breathe culture at all of our companies, but definitely at a startup company, that's where the tone is set. And we're talking about corporate culture here. We're not talking about, you know, a religious culture or a geographical culture. We're talking about the lifeblood of a company, of a corporate culture. So, for example, at Genie Cash, you know, we hired our first employee in 2015. We launched in May of 2016. I think we're up to about 16, 17 employees now. But the culture is really set key. What's our office environment like? Who are the team members we're bringing on? What is the fun we're going to have? Because we know we're going to work hard. We know we're going to have some really good days. And as a startup or any business, we also know we're going to have some really bad days. So the culture in the team is really important. And what is that culture? How do we treat each other? How do we respect each other? How do we treat our clients? How do we act as a family that actually our employees come first and their families come first? And you know, so it's really important for us of what that culture is. Then, you know, our startup, the name is Genie Cast, and we have this kind of whole genie theme. On somebody's first day, they get a beautiful brass magic lamp so we can help make sure their personal dreams come true. And we play up the Genie Casting not only with our customers but our team members. So great question. And everything we're doing, for example, in all of our companies, but in the corporate culture of Genie Cast is, you know, a lot of companies you can only contact them via email. Well, we have kind of 24/7 email, chat messaging, phone calls, because if we want to be a different company, what is the corporate culture of obsessing over our clients? You know, and so corporate culture works every way. It's how you behave as a company, how you work with your team members, how you perform for your customers, you know, all of those different things. So really, really important in any company at all, but especially an entrepreneurial venture, even if you're a two-person startup.
How was the culture? What was the culture like in your business when you first started it?
Well, my, you know, original business, which we started over 30 years ago, you know, it was me and my business partner. So the culture was two people that didn't know what they were doing. And the good thing about our culture when we started was that at least we had a good culture set in. We were friends with each other. We respected each other. We did what we loved. And then we hired our first employer and said, our employee, let's hire somebody like us because we want to respect them and we want to have fun and we want to work hard for our clients. And I think a lot of the times the founder sets those cultural tones. And by the way, you've seen in many businesses that, you know, I love Uber, I ride Uber, but, you know, the CEO and founder of Uber was forced out by their board of directors by a terrible culture, by, you know, sexual allegations, by, you know, you know, just a lot of things that are not the right culture for any company. And then it affects your customers and it affects your team. So in our original company, you know, fortunately, we had a really good culture that never means you're perfect and you have to adjust. But you know, over time, in my original company, again, which is 32 years old, culture is still a very key. We have huge walls, which actually have painted on there our visions about our culture of integrity and respect and those things. On Friday, we have beer cart Fridays where team members bring beers to each other. We have a lot of fun, but we work hard. We measure on a weekly basis our employees' happiness. We have open dialogues of what's going on right with the company and what's going on wrong with the company. So any of the companies, but that first company, culture, you know, not that we were ever perfect, but we've always worked hard at it for 32 years, and we still do every day in that business.
How do you ensure that you hire the right people so that they fit with the culture in your business?
So I think it's a very hard question, and it's very hard to put in action. I think if you ask anywhere from Fortune 500 companies all the way to small entrepreneurial businesses, the people quotient is still the hardest. You can test, you can interview, you can interview, you can test. It takes a lot of work. And so it's a blend of a variety of finding the people that fit within your culture and we fit within them. And so that requires everything from interviews, both formal and informal, discussions, dinners, testing, references. And we've gotten much better at it, but every once in a while we have someone who just, we're not the right fit for them or they're not the right fit for us. But we've gotten a lot more intelligence of who fits and who doesn't. And by the way, you know, in all of our companies, we have a no jerks policy. So if somebody's the most talented person in the world, but they're a jerk, we don't want them in our company. We'd rather have a little less talented person that everybody loves to work with and being respected. So really, really important, the interviewing process. We include a lot of different people on our teams in the interviewing process, even though the hire manager will probably make the final with the final input. But, you know, over time, we've made a lot of hiring mistakes. People we thought would be great, and they just turned out to be jerks. And we've had to say, hey, this is going to be really painful, but they're not the right fit. And we've also had people over time that said, hey, you guys are working way too hard, or I want to be in a different industry that deselect from us. And so it's a two-way street, and we really work hard at it.
How much does gut feeling influence your decisions in your business?
Really good question. And, you know, for someone who likes more and more data, I'm also a gut feeling type of person, and a lot of us are. I think it has to be a hybrid of gut feeling with data, because gut feeling is sometimes a wish. And, you know, what's happening more and more, we're becoming more and more dependent on data. Right? I have a gut feeling that a TV show is going to work, but I can test it overnight online now and get real data versus the old way of spending millions of dollars to launch a TV show or something. So I would say hybrid now between a gut feeling and data. And if you're experienced in business, you've got the data in your head or on your laptop, and then you've got the gut feel in your gut. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that if I have to make a 30-second decision, your gut will guide you, hopefully with some data filled in.
What makes you uncomfortable as an entrepreneur?
I'm pretty comfortable as an entrepreneur. So what makes me uncomfortable is things that I can't control. Did we hire the right person? Do we have the right fit with a customer? You know, am I the right fit for a project? But all those are kind of what's in the offering of being an entrepreneur. It keeps it exciting. But there's not a lot that I'm uncomfortable with about being an entrepreneur. I love the day-to-day. I love the excitement. I love the change. I love the competitiveness. And I love working side-by-side with people. So I don't have a lot of downsides.
What do you think are some of the secrets to success?
I do not believe in secrets to success. I think there's formulas. And if you study, which many, many people have written books, but if you continue to study successful people, you know, I forget, I think it was The Tipping Point that had your, you know, everybody was successful after 10,000 hours of anything. So, you know, Bill Gates, they figured had 10,000 hours. He started as a teenager, and by the time he started Microsoft, he had 10,000 hours of experience. Or a famous violin player that they said she's successful overnight, but she actually had been studying for years and years and had 10,000 hours. And so my belief is people that are successful really work hard. They've got success behind them, but they're also not afraid to take a chance. But I don't believe in luck. I believe people make their own luck. And so that means learning, reading, and contacting, and going and doing. It's hard work. So I don't believe there's the secret to success. I really do believe you make your success. And if you talk to a Hollywood actor, a famous hockey player, or a famous cricket player, or a Nobel Prize winner, nobody did it overnight. It's always been hard work. They've been knocked down, they've picked themselves up. They've been knocked down, they've picked themselves up. And those, to me, are the most successful people.
Life is made of constant change, whether we like it or not. And many people say that the only constant in life is change. Keith, how do you try to keep up with change?
So I have to keep on reminding myself and our teams that you know, change is every day. And so when you're heading a direction as an entrepreneurial company or any companies, overnight something can change that, right? Almost overnight, Amazon changed the retail industry in the U.S. Almost overnight, fintech is challenging our old banking systems. And so if we don't embrace change, I mean, you know, look back in history, okay? And so, again, looking what's into the future, you know, 10 years from now, we're not going to be talking about autonomous driving cars because that's all there is going to be, okay? So the people that are going to still make and rent cars on the market that they are today will not be around. And so there was a famous entrepreneur that said you should always be looking over your left shoulder. We look over our left shoulder all the time because change is every single day. There's competitors that are working to knock my business off. There are new technologies that we can run our business off of. By the way, to start a business now is the easiest and best time ever in our history. You can run more tools with free software and online and in the cloud than ever before. You don't need an office. You don't need a phone system. You don't even need employees anymore. So embrace change, get ahead of change. And if you can get ahead of change, you're going to beat your competitors and start new businesses.
What is your favorite book on entrepreneurialism, business, personal development, leadership, or motivation? And can you tell us why you have chosen it?
Wow. So I read a lot, but I glance through a lot. So there's way too many books. A friend and a VC named Brad Feld, who's out of Boulder, Colorado, who's been behind a lot of successful startups from Zynga and Fitbit. You know, he's got a series of books around startups that I love because it's real world information for a lot of people that I'll either mentor or I'll run to one of those books to say, what's Brad's thoughts here when I can't call him and ask him? And so I love Brad's books. I read more around business than I do startups because I've done so many startups and I've been an entrepreneur, but I do like to read other entrepreneur books. There is a book that was done by the founder of LinkedIn called The Alliance, and they talk about, I think he wrote it with maybe one of the co-founders of Netflix. It's a great book. It talks about tours of duty on your team. So there's just a lot of great books out there. You know, to me, still the New York Times top business books or the if you search Amazon and look for the top entrepreneur books, those people are being read the most because they have probably the most to say.
Folks, when you have a busy life, listening to audiobooks is a great way to expand your knowledge in the time when you may be doing other things, such as driving or when you are at the gym. We have a special offer for you of a free audiobook of your choosing. To choose your free audiobook, go to www.freeaudiobookoffer.com. As long as you've not already signed up, you will qualify. Keith, we're now going to speculate about the future a little bit. What one thing would you do with your business if you knew that you could not fail?
The one thing I would do for my business if we could not fail, was that the question?
Yes.
Wow, that is a big question. Remember I told you we're genies, so it was always if someone got one wish, what would your wish be? And my one wish, but it would be a million more wishes, right? So I think the one thing in business would be an unlimited resource of potential clients or clients. Most businesses worry about sales and marketing, and they might have a great product, but you're always looking for the market. Either you got to market, they got to find you, you got to advertise. And so in all of our businesses, once we find the right clients, they fall in love with us. But it's still, I don't care if you're a Fortune 500 or a startup, who is your market? How do they find you? And do you have a pipeline to sales? And that would be kind of my one big wish if there were no resource limitation.
What skill, if you were excellent at it, would help you the most to double your business?
I would continue to say understanding different markets and sales. So I'm not a finance guy, but I don't want to be a finance guy. I have a finance person. We're really good at content. So I think those skills would be, you know, again, I want to continue to learn and excel in sales and marketing, even though at times we think we're pretty good. We talked about change a little bit earlier. What are the new methods? What are the new go-to-market strategies, especially as our world continues to get more and more digital?
In 5 years from now, if a well-known business publication was publishing an article on your business after talking to your customers and suppliers, what would you like it to say?
We would like the article headline to say, GenieCast, the world's largest marketplace of speakers, authors, experts, celebrities, and more, delivers unbelievable content which changes people's lives in their business, even in personal, their philanthropy, and other lives, and creates thousands of jobs and creates wealth for its investors, kind of the three-way legged stool, and all bringing value and change to this world.
It's now time to share three golden nuggets. Keith, what is your favorite quote and how have you applied it?
Hard question, and I don't have three. You know, these are more things that have been handed down to me by either mentors or clients or, you know, past bosses. First is that on the leadership side is that servant leadership. So you'll see a lot of org charts where the CEO or founder is at the top. I've always loved where the CEO or founder is at the bottom. And it's the customers that are on top. It's the team that's on top. It's the suppliers that are on top. So I've always loved that servant leadership metaphor, and we live into that. The other is treating others like you want to be treated. And that starts, again, with customers, with suppliers, and with teammates. And business isn't always easy. But if you treat each other with respect, you can get through anything. You can even have disagreements and see the other side, but it's treating each other with respect. And if you do that, your employees are going to love working for the team, your customers are going to love you, and your business partners will love you. And so treating each other with respect. So we talked about servant leadership. We talked about treating each other with respect. And the last one that I always tell my team is to be different, or what we call the wow factor. It's easy to get lost in the crowd. In everything we try to do in life, myself personally, and everything we do in our business, is what's the wow factor? How am I going to be remembered? And that means giving a little extra more to a customer, more than they paid for, always doing the right thing for your employees and more, doing something a little extra special. It's like that cherry on top, because so many businesses and people don't do it, right? I've heard from somebody that says recently, I was on an airline and I got great service, and they were blogging about having great service. Well, when that's supposed to be, you're supposed to get great service all the time. So what is the wow or the extra cherry on top? And how do you give that to your customers, your employees, just even someone on the street? What is that wow factor, that little extra?
Do you have any favorite online resources you can share with us that'd be useful for other entrepreneurs?
Oh, wow. I think there's a number of, searches you could search for it, but I'm very much into peer groups. So there's a lot of different peer groups. One's called EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization, which I was very fortunate to be the international chair of in the late 90s. That's a peer group of over 12,000 entrepreneurs. And if you're in it, you get a lot of stuff. And even if you're not in it, there's great data. Also involved in an organization called YPO, the Young Presence Organization. That's 25 global CEOs around the world. And again, they have resources if you're in the organization, but also out of the organization. There's peer groups like Vistage. There's many, many resources out there on entrepreneurship and innovation, from magazines like an online like Fast Company and Inc. Magazine and Forbes, CEO Read. There's Abstract. So many great sites. It's a little overwhelming. And so at times what I go and do is do a Google search and have those fed to me on certain clients or certain industries. So for example, and this is a lesson I was going to share, there's so much new stuff like artificial intelligence, blockchain, and Bitcoin. We should all be studying that now. And these are the same sites that I go to study and really get up to speed. Like, tell me more. I want to learn more about AI, even though I use it on Amazon Alexa. Or how do I learn more about how blockchain is going to change almost every industry? And how do I go learn on that? And then maybe eventually I'd go hire an expert on GenieCast. But there's so many sites. And what you're doing, Neil, is providing great information of hearing all different types of entrepreneurs where people can listen to your podcast and read blogs and all that type of information. There's more resources out there than ever. I think it's finding the niche of what interests either someone that wants to be an entrepreneur, someone that works for an entrepreneur, someone that is an entrepreneur. There's so much great content, but you also can't get lost in the content. You got to go run your business.
Well, thank you for that, Keith. And the final question, what is your best advice to other entrepreneurs?
To other entrepreneurs, after doing this for a long time, is there's a few things. Keep learning. The world's changing every day. And the more we talk to other entrepreneurs, we realize we're not alone. That idea wasn't so stupid. That failure, I can pick myself up. Being in peer networks or with other entrepreneurs who have gone through this, it's like saying, I've never played football before, but if I did play professional football, I could share those stories and ask other people, how'd you do this or what'd you do? So being able to be around other entrepreneurs, be it online, in a group, and being able to share things and share what are successes, what are failures, how'd you learn, that's my number one thing, is don't do it alone.
Folks, if you didn't manage to get a note of Keith's favourite resource or his favourite book, you can find the links on Keith's show notes page. Just go to theentrepreneurway.com and search for Keith or Keith Alper in the search box. Keith, is there anything else that you would like to add about your business?
Well, first of all, I really want to thank you for the time. It was great to getting to know you, Neil, and thank you for what you do in advancing entrepreneurship around the globe. No, our businesses, we have a lot of fun. Just a few little sites if people want to go to them. Our overall company is called the Nitrous Effect. That's N-I-T-R-O-U-S effect.com. And that's got all of our companies. And then I do have a personal website which shares some of these same thoughts about entrepreneurship, family, and other businesses. And that's at Keith Alper, K-E-I-T-H-A-L-P-E-R.com. So some more resources there.
Keith, it really has been such an honor and a privilege to have you on the show today. Thank you for coming on and talking about GenieCast and this two-way interactive platform that you've developed, for sharing hindsight, insight and foresight, but also sharing lots of great advice and tips. You really have given us some great information today. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
Great. Thanks a lot, Neil. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
You are welcome, Keith, and thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Entrepreneur Way. Subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter at Neil D. Ball.